This is the segment I was most looking forward to, because today's HN lineup has an unusually rich collection of stories about computing history, creative technology, and the people and projects that shaped how we got here. Let me start with the Carmack on Bellard post. 338 points, 196 comments. John Carmack, if you need the context, is the IDE Software co-founder, responsible for the rendering engines behind Doom and Quake, and Fabrice Bellard is the French software engineer who created FFmpeg, QEMU, TinyCC, and a JavaScript engine called QuickJS that runs a full JS environment in under a megabyte of RAM. Carmack's tweet was essentially a public expression of admiration for Bellard as someone operating at a different level of technical capability.
The comments on this thread are a genuine celebration of what the community sometimes calls 10x engineers, though that framing undersells it. Bellard isn't 10 times more productive than a typical engineer. He's producing things that typical engineers couldn't produce with 10 times the time. FFmpeg is the backbone of essentially all video processing on the internet. QEMU enabled entire categories of virtualization and emulation research. These aren't incremental improvements. They're capabilities that didn't exist until he built them. The discussion gets into what conditions produce this kind of output. Deep domain knowledge, willingness to work on problems that don't have established solutions, and apparently a remarkable tolerance for the kind of sustained focus that complex systems require.
There's a teaching moment embedded in this thread about how technical leverage actually works. Bellard's tools are used billions of times daily by systems he has no direct involvement with. Every time someone streams a video, converts a file, or runs a virtual machine, there's a reasonable chance FFmpeg or QEMU is involved somewhere in the stack. The economic value created by those tools dwarfs any reasonable estimate of the compensation he received for building them. That's the nature of open source infrastructure. The value is diffuse and enormous. The attribution is minimal.
The x86 emulator story from Raymond Chen's Old New Thing blog got 297 points and 91 comments, and it's wonderful. The setup is this. Microsoft's x86 emulation team, which is responsible for running 32-bit x86 software on ARM-based Windows systems, sometimes encountered code that was so broken, making assumptions about processor behavior that were never documented, relying on undefined behavior that happened to work on specific chip generations, that the correct response to emulating it faithfully was to produce incorrect output. The code expected incorrect behavior, and the emulator had to provide incorrect behavior to make the application function.
This is one of my favorite categories of software story, the case where fixing the bug means faithfully reproducing the bug, because users have built dependencies on the buggy behavior. The HN comments are full of examples. The Windows API is a rich source of these. There are behaviors in the Windows API that are clearly wrong by any principled standard, but that have been preserved for 20 or 30 years because removing them would break real software that real people use. Compatibility is a form of social contract, and sometimes honoring that contract means carrying bugs forward indefinitely.
The banned book library in a Wi-Fi smart light bulb, 413 points, 218 comments, is the kind of story that HN loves for its combination of technical cleverness and political resonance. Richard Osgood built a device that functions as a normal smart light bulb, but also runs a captive portal Wi-Fi network that serves a library of banned and challenged books. Connect to the network, and before you can do anything else, you get access to the texts. The technical execution involves running a small web server on the ESP32 or similar microcontroller that handles the bulb's smart features, serving the book content from flash storage.
What makes this more than a clever hack is the context. Book challenges and bans in public and school libraries have increased significantly in the past several years in the United States. The response from advocates has been largely institutional, legal challenges, policy advocacy. This project represents a different kind of response, technical circumvention at the physical layer. A device that looks like a consumer product but embeds a library. The comments debate the ethics and practicality. Some people raise questions about unattended wireless networks and the legal landscape. Others celebrate it, as a legitimate form of civil disobedience through technology.
Garden of Flowers is a project that deserves more points than it got. 85 points. Because it's doing genuinely important archival work. It's a collection of pictorial typography from before ASCII art existed as a concept. Text-based images that predate computers. Created with typewriters and print typography. Going back decades, there's a long tradition of using text characters to create images that people associate almost entirely with ASCII art and its internet-era descendants. But the roots go much further back. This archive is preserving that history with careful documentation and beautiful presentation.
And Trinket.io, a browser-based Python coding environment used by educators, particularly for teaching beginners, announced it was shutting down. A developer at Strive Math stepped in and preserved it at trinket.strivemath.org. 27 points, but two comments that are entirely positive. This is a pattern worth noting. The HN community has a strong preservation instinct. When tools that people depend on for education or creative work shut down, there's often someone who steps forward to run the infrastructure at cost. It's a form of digital commons maintenance.
Commander Keen's game engine white paper got 215 points, and this is purely a retro computing celebration. The post breaks down the scrolling and rendering techniques that John Romero and John Carmack developed for Commander Keen in 1990, specifically the EGA planar graphics tricks that allowed smooth scrolling on hardware that had no hardware scroll support. The techniques are fascinating, precisely because they're solutions to constraints that no longer exist, which gives them a kind of purity. There was one right answer to the problem given those exact constraints. And these engineers found it.
Perlin Noisefield's getting covered, 46 points, is a nice entry point for the creative coding community. Perlin Noise is the algorithm underlying most procedurally generated textures and terrain in games, and the post explores how to use flow fields derived from Perlin Noise for generative art. It's one of those mathematical tools that sits at the intersection of computer science and visual art, and the HN community always has a warm response to work that treats programming as a creative medium.
Gamma correction, what every coder should know about it, resurfaced today from a 2016 post and got 103 points. The reason it stays relevant is that gamma is one of those concepts that most developers encounter without ever understanding, leading to subtle bugs in image processing, rendering, and color manipulation. The short version, displays don't render light linearly. If you do math on pixel values assuming they're linear, your results are wrong in ways that are visually obvious to trained eyes, but invisible to people who don't know what to look for. The post is thorough enough that it became a reference that people keep sharing.
And then there's TinyWind, 870 points, 157 comments, a pixel art sailing game with real wind physics and 380,000 kilometers sailed by players. That number is the headline. The game has been running long enough with enough player engagement that the cumulative distance sailed across all games is comparable to a real ocean voyage multiple times over. The comments discuss both the technical approach to simulating wind, which uses actual meteorological models, or at least plausible approximations, and the design philosophy of creating a game that rewards patience and observation rather than reaction time.